It is time for us to begin. Actually, probably a couple minutes past time for us to begin. But we shall start. If you get an opportunity, Heather says she's going to host it. There's a bonfire devotional Saturday night, the 10th, 6:30 to 10, or whenever you stay till, at the McCaslin's house. Eric and Dawn, Jack and Abby would love to have you come and the goats
and
the chickens. They're going to have a hayride, hot dogs, s'mores,
and singing. We're hoping we'll have a hayride.
Well, for all of us and the team.
But if we don't come, it doesn't help. Everybody needs to be able to go. Please put that on your list of things you would love to attend. Don't know if anybody's seen it. We have a dumpster to get rid of stuff from around the building. I don't know why they delivered one that was already half full, but they did.
Half full?
Oh, sorry.
That's hilarious.
Dave only paid for half of it.
Dave said he was going to get one, and I just couldn't let it sit there. So yesterday I filled half of it.
Oh, yeah.
And I didn't even get in the shed yet.
There's probably spiders in
here. Spiders were the least of my concerns.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad it was semi-cool because those fast-moving, stinging objects were around. They had invested in growing in that, a few of the items.
You talking about the stuff in the shed?
Yeah.
What's a fast-moving stinging object?
Wasps.
Yeah, I'm playing myself scorpions.
No, they don't. They're not fast. They're slow.
They definitely stink.
Don't be joking. We get them at work. The little brown scorpions.
Yeah,
they this area. Don't be joking around.
Scorpions.
They are not small either. This thing goes. They don't look
here. There is no scorpion.
Yes, there are.
You could debate that forever. You got to bring one in, or else it's never going to
happen.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to finish up, hopefully, chapter 3 about the sermon. And we went through last week finding historically where it came from. Most of its roots are in the Greco-Roman culture. I find it interesting that one of the very things that we often use is a rhetorical question, right? You've been asked rhetorical questions. What are they expecting when they ask a rhetorical question?
The correct answer.
Oh, actually, no. You're not supposed to answer. It's a rhetorical
question.
I just want you to think about it. But in fact, the rhetorical question required what?
The correct answer.
A correct answer. Or at least an answer. But we've changed that whole process just like everything else. It's changed over time. A rhetorical question was meant to cause you to think and respond. Now it's just, I want you to think about it. Don't answer it. Which is just the opposite of how you actually should learn. To truly learn something, what do you have to do? And that is the answer, by the way. To truly learn something, you have to be able to do it. What do they cause you to do at school? I don't just put it on the board once and say you're done with it, right? You learned it. I just told you about it in 30 minutes. You're done. Let's move on to the next thing. What do they do?
Make you do it over and over.
Over and over. Why?
To make you miserable.
No. Although it does. But it's not why they do that. Why do they do it?
To make you retain it.
To make you retain it. Because once isn't good. Twice is not enough. To actually remember something, you have to at least hear it 10 times. That's just to remember it. To be able to do it, not only do you have to hear it 10 times, you have to be able to have done it at least that many times to remember how to do it. Otherwise, you'll forget it. I talked on this a little bit last week at the end of class. How were the Jews instructed to teach their children?
Every moment.
Exactly. Every moment. And he didn't just say, teach them every moment. I love how most of the writers do this. When they imply, I want you to teach them every moment, they don't leave many things out. Teach them when they rise up, when they lay down, when you walk in the way, when you're sitting, when you're eating, when... I mean, they give a complete list, like in case you forgot one, or in case you do what most of it. Well, you didn't say that. Right? So we look for the loopholes. The early church, as we talked last week, was very much on getting together to learn and discuss topics. They would meet in houses. They would meet at the temple. And they talked. They would discuss it. The sermon didn't come around until 300 years later. Didn't really get locked in until roughly the 1300s. And about that time, we elevated the speaker above the topic. Unfortunately, it also locked most Christians into being pacifist listeners. I kind of got from what he was trying to say is we're addicted to sermons, and preachers are addicted to the accolades of preaching. How many people have you asked, or have asked you lately, how are things at Echo Hills? Yeah. Come on. You talk to somebody, and where are you going? Oh, yeah, how are you doing? Yeah. Who's your preacher? First question, right? Mm-hmm. Almost every time.
Now, where is it?
Where is that?
Oh, yeah, second question. Yeah. Second question. Yeah.
It's by that motel.
Why, when you first ask about a congregation, is the question, who's your preacher?
So they can automatically know how good it is.
Because we relate a congregation.
I've heard of him.
And we relate a congregation to the preacher. We have come to the point that if you don't have a preacher, you can't be a congregation. You got to have a preacher before you even have elders. Right? You know what my answer is anymore? I love it.
Which 14 are you
on? No. Even better than that.
Oh, really?
Yep. Because when they ask, who's your preacher? I said, we've grown beyond that. We have grown beyond the need for a preacher. Because we've actually gotten back to what Paul said. Each of you edify one another. Because what was the purpose of the preaching to start with? Or a sermon, actually. Because preaching is technically a whole different animal. Very few sermons are preaching. Now, I threw that out there. Think in your mind, why?
It's entertainment / justification for why you came to church.
Okay, that's one. What did Paul, every time he used the word preach, either actually say or imply?
He's talking about imparting knowledge that they didn't already have.
Yeah. The what?
Sharing the good news.
All right. Imparting knowledge they didn't have about Christ. And so therefore, if you're not talking about the good news of Jesus Christ, in Paul's definition, you're not preaching. Now, there's a lot of other things that are done in sermons, but they're not always preaching. What should we do every week? Right? We talked about a sermon, where it came from. And I pretty much gave a sermon last week on purpose to show you that even though I asked questions, you wouldn't answer me. Why are we getting responses this week? Totally different than last week.
Because we're tired of not talking.
No.
You're not going to fool us twice.
Yeah.
I doubt that, too, because I'm sure I could. Because the demeanor and the conditions make it to where you are comfortable responding. You can easily condition a crowd, and yes, you are a crowd. One of my favorite, off the topic here, one of my favorite quotes of all time, and I would love to say I remember who said it. I just remember what he said. He said, individuals are smart, people are stupid. As a group, we lose all of our intelligence. We have some very smart individuals, but anytime we get together in a group, I refer to it at work as death by committee. Anytime we get a project, they tell us, oh, we have a committee to help you review your design. Forget it. We just lost money. We'll never come out well on this project. If they say, we have a person that will help us work through your design and we'll come up with a building, say, we're going to make some decisions. The minute there's more than three people involved, forget it. Because individuals are smart. People are stupid. We follow crowd mentality, and even though every person there, if they've been asked before it happened, is Jesus going to be crucified today, would have told you, probably other than the high priest, no way, not going to happen. And yet, what happened? Right, so when we get together in large groups, we have a tendency to give up our individuality. We even give up the fact that we know we're capable of thought. Because either that person we revere, or I just don't want to stand out in a crowd and be looked at.
Well, you talk to people individually, and this is the part that I struggle with too. Yeah. You talk to people individually about the study we're doing or whatever, and you tell them, talk about some of the stuff, and they're just like, oh, that's awesome, that's great, and then they go back to the same place that they've been,
yeah,
in the same exact mode of thinking and acting, and they seem satisfied there, even though in their mind, their own individual mind, they see that there are some problems, there's some things that aren't exactly right.
But I'm not willing to be the person to instigate any change. I would be happy to go along with it if someone else was willing to take all the heat for it, or someone else did all the work for it, someone did all the preparation for it. I would be happy to be there.
As I was told the other day, it's just too far gone. It's too late. That was the exact words of when...
It's not worth the effort that it will take to fix it.
It's too far gone.
And I believe most Christians believe that about the church.
Yeah. They know there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
They know there's a problem.
They know it's not what they're reading Acts.
It was so funny. I sent out an email, yesterday about some issues at work, and it was so funny. A girlfriend of mine had stopped over at the house, and we were going to do something that afternoon, and she's kind of a big person at one of the other big congregations, and I said, I want to show you something. And she's like, what? Mm-hmm. And I had sort of talked to her a little bit about what had happened at work, and I pulled up my email thing, and I said, look at these things, and I put a check beside them, all the emails that had come that had said, I'm praying for you, I'm praying for you, I'm praying for you, I'm praying for you. I mean, just do all that. I said, I don't have any problems.
Yeah.
And because she told me, she said, you didn't call us, my little girlfriend group. I said, feel like I really needed to. All of a sudden, it's just, I got, she said, she sat there and you could see the look on her face, and she said, I don't have that. And I said, well, she said, but I can't. I work for the church. I couldn't tell anybody anything that happened. I said, well, I didn't give them like exact details. I just said,
had a
rough day, had some, would you pray for me? Because I don't know what's fixing to come. I didn't give exact details, and her, the look on her face was, I can't do that. And I mean, I felt like it just stuck me in my heart, because she's one of my dearest friends, and I thought, that is so sad. so sad.
And it can't be because of the size of the congregation, because they're not near as big as the church in Jerusalem had become the very first day. And yet it said they met daily, house to house. To do what? To pray. Right. Yeah. Actually, it said they ate together. They did everything, you know, because they wanted to be involved in one another's lives. You know, what we've created Sunday morning worship to be is the one feeding stop for most of the church. It's the one time all week long most of them will get any edification, any teaching, any of the Word of God presented to them in any way, shape, or form. It's sad, but it's true. In a one-hour time slot, which was a rigidly defined one-hour time slot, we have to sing, we have to pray, we have to have the Lord's Supper, we have to be sermonized. We have to spend whatever little time we have with each other, and that's it. Now, the really dedicated ones come back on Sunday night. Now, the ultra-dedicated come on Wednesday night, which is the only true time most congregations have set aside any time for Bible study.
Most of those people dread it. They have to go.
School teachers do not spend 3 hours a week with children to teach them. If you did, they wouldn't learn anything. Why is it we accept that that's the norm, the standard, the way it should be? I have a little strange background, different than a lot. I mean, my parents did not grow up in the Church of Christ. Dad was converted to be a Christian in the Army in Louisiana. I mean, he was a Christian in the Dutch Reformed Church in Chicago his whole life. Which is one of those very rigid, very to the letter. The response from the audience is known every week. Exactly the, he said, you didn't even have to be handed the order of worship. You knew it. There's no reason. They should have printed it, but they did every week because that was one of the things that had to be done. Said, it took me 5 years from the time he said, look at this, study it. He said, I went back and started asking questions. Finally, they came down to the answer, if you don't like it, leave. Rather than, let's discuss it. So you don't like what we do, you need to leave. He said the best thing he ever told me. So I still didn't know the right answer, but I was willing to look for it. Now, we left Chicago when I was 9, moved to a nice town, 16,000 people, biggest town of 60 miles. The closest congregation of the Church of Christ was 60 miles away, which we went to every week. We spent the day in the town the church was in, because we weren't going home. Now, it wasn't until we found two other families doing the same thing, we said, hey, you know what? We don't have to do this every day. And we met in our living room. Before we left that town 5 years later, there were 60 people in that congregation. So I learned what it takes. And I was a song leader at the time, and that's why I don't do it anymore. I hated it then, and I found out I wasn't good at it. Nothing worse than having a 9 through 12 year old kid lead singing, because the notes never stay where they're supposed to. And I still have one of those mental blocks today. Just not happy with it. But I found out that it's more than just coming, sitting down, and leaving. Because everywhere you go, in that town, once you started a new church and you started talking to people about it, it was predominantly a Catholic church. The whole city was Catholic. There were a few Baptists. They were the radicals. We were really radical. Because they believed we can do whatever we want as long as we go and tell the priest, say, I'm sorry, go back and do it tomorrow. And so you try and convince them, that's not the way it looks, And they said, well, that's not what the priest told me. Have you ever read it yourself? No, why should I? It is really sad to me that so many congregations lose members when they change preachers. To me, that's preacher worship. If you are only going to a congregation because you enjoy being entertained or because you like his style, you're not going to worship God. You're going to worship that individual. You may disagree with me, but that is my opinion. My favorite thing to tell a minister is at the end of the day, say, I'm glad to have you here, brother. So I didn't come here because of you. I come here in spite of you. Watch their face. The only people that don't walk out the door and tell, oh, that was wonderful. When you didn't mean it to start with. Because I don't remember what you said 5 minutes ago. I toned you out. Okay, y'all look at me like, oh, that never happened. I know it does. Because I've done it. Much as I don't want to. At my best day, I'll tone him out and start reading. You know, if I really find something that interests me that might make some impact on me today. Because really, that's what we come together for, right? If God didn't think we needed to come together, he wouldn't have said that you should come together each week. The worship part, he knew we could do on a mountaintop by ourselves. Why did he ask us all to come together? So we could be preached to? All right, now we're getting to the real reasons, right? Because it can't be the flowery speech. Because Paul himself, one of the best orators in the early church, the most trained of all the apostles, said that I will not speak to you in flowery words or language because that actually degrades the message of Christ. Because once you do that, who are you looking up to? The message or the messenger? Twice in 1 Corinthians that he says, I will not use excellence of speech, but the words of Christ. The power of the gospel. So if we're going to accept the notion that's in this chapter, that a sermon has its roots in the Greco-Roman culture, and that it inhibits the growth, the spiritual growth of the church, what should we do? Now, if we don't accept that notion, what do? We just keep doing what we've always done, right? Oh, I like it the way it is. But we started last week, and I asked the question, how many sermons do you remember in the last 5 years? Just the topic. Give me a title. Can you do it? If they truly meant something to you, you'd be able to. Not only just the topic, most of what was said. I could probably say what was said 2 weeks ago. And how many of you are going to go, let me think. Okay, you got one. You at least knew who it was. But how much of an impact does it have on us? Even if you walk up and say, man, I love that sermon. I needed to hear that. Good. Now, how much did you change because of it? Even if you needed to hear it, which, you know, a lot of times we do need to hear them. But how much of an impact did it have on you to cause you to change?
People don't change because the preacher said something about it. People change because they want to. Sure. Once they make the decision.
There you go. And how do we come to a decision? How do we come to the point in our lives that we are willing to make a decision to do something? Because really, I think that's what we should be doing each week. If the sermon isn't producing that result, what do we have to do to get to a point that causes that kind of reaction in our life? This is the point where you throw out ideas to see what we can do.
Well, I remember a lot of what you said that a couple weeks ago, and have actually thought differently about television. I've actually thought differently about what I watch on TV.
I have 225 channels that come into my house, six of which I may watch. And only about half of that is worth watching.
Because there are shows I really like. That, and even now, and they're not, you know, they're not The Bachelor and crap like that, but it's, sorry, we're being late, sorry. stuff like that. But just like stuff like Pawn Stars and stuff like that. You know, that's kind of, I like that show. But like every other sentence the guy says, he has a cuss word in it. And I bleep it out, but you know what he says. Okay. And I was just thinking, you know, we were talking about, Becky's been challenging me to not be watching those shows, not only just around the kids, but also for myself, you know. It's got some great stuff in it. It's funny. It's interesting. But there are just some things that I don't need to be watching. And you made me think about that again. And I've started making some changes, trying to.
And sadly, I've noticed a bunch of that with movies, too. Is like, when you go to watch a movie, it could be one of the greatest movies you saw, but because they threw in some cuss words, you're like, that didn't even make sense. That wasn't even needed. Like, I go back and, like, think about, well, if that wasn't there, would that have changed my opinion about this movie? And the answer was no. If that was gone, I still would have liked it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, so then why are you putting it in there? And usually it's just for ratings. You know, I think that they used not to do it because, you know, they weren't allowed to. Now they try to put so many in. Even, you know, we always have this joke around my house with Mom. We found out what the unrated version was. We had no idea when we first got it. We realized later that's not good. But we went to go to a movie, which Mom picked up that unrated one. But we went to a movie to go see that Fool's Gold or Fool Rush or whatever that was. They found the treasure or whatever. And the very first scene is these college people on a boat. And this girl just flashes people. And it had nothing to do with the whole movie at all. Like, that was not the point of it, and, like, everything else was great after that, but yet, the very first scene was that, and I'm like, I could have done without that in my life, you know? I could have, you know, the next 5 minutes came in a little late and been happy, but it's sad.
Yeah. It's actually funny that we're talking about it, because that's what I'm preaching about this morning, too. I'm going to recap some of the things that you talked about, and talk about it maybe a little differently, too, because I feel like some of the things that you said were very important. And some of those things have been on my mind for a long time. Yeah. And I've actually known that I was going to preach about that since the last time I preached was October of last year. I was like, this is the next thing I want to preach about.
How long is this sermon going to be? You preparing for a whole year?
No, it won't be the long first one, but I think it might be. No,
you guys always talk about knowing what you want to preach about for a year.
That was the last time I preached.
Oh, I'll preach this morning. I guess I'll preach.
Well, I mean, if you haven't been thinking about it for a while, it's difficult to get to that point. I mean, I have 50 different topics in my mind any given time, narrowing them down. So I've been thinking about it for a year. It's the one that keeps coming back recurringly, but somebody's trying to tell me, this is something you need to talk about. Because you can't get it out of your head.
Something's telling you.
Like,
well, we focus way too much on the style of it.
Oh,
and the way that things are done instead of, you know, is this something that is going to challenge somebody? Is this something that's going to make me think about it, you know, all week? I'm going to take some things that you said, and I'm going to study it, and I'm going to, you know, more of a teaching than a motivational sermon. Because we can get motivated about a lot of things for about two days, and then it's done. And some preachers are very talented at stylistically challenging you and making you emotional and making you think about stuff, but then the substance may not be there, or it doesn't give you any thought to really make it a long-lasting change.
It's the seeds that go down into the rocky soil. They sprout up, and then they wither away. Yeah.
It's like the New Year's resolution that I remember you talking about that one time. That's right.
I have resolved not to do those ever again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to say that I appreciate your lesson. I didn't get a chance to tell you, but just growing up, my family was like that. Yeah. We were not allowed to watch a lot of stuff, and we had to look up on ScreenIt.com before we can even go to movies, and my parents had to make sure that it was actually decent, and even PG movies weren't always the best either, sadly. But
now, if Hollywood thinks it's bad enough that you need to ask your parents, you should know.
Well, what's sad was a lot of the youth group when I was at Rivergate would go to movies. We would be invited and everything. Mom and Dad said, no, you can't go. No, you can't go. All the time. So a lot of the stuff they would do, we could not go at all. And I don't know. I barely...
That's the leader's fault.
Not under my leadership.
No, not
I never went to movies.
No, but...
you could afford to go to movies.
It was our team leaders. Like,
No, I barely watch TV at all, and Matt doesn't even have a TV, and whenever I bring over movies on my laptop, they're always cartoons.
You know I don't know anything about being a leader.
That's true. Good point. So what were the kind of things the early church was told to do? When you come together, what are the things you should be doing? Anybody? What were they supposed to be doing?
Things for edification.
Edification, first one on my list, right?
Can I ask a question, Rich? I don't know if this is pertaining to your lesson, but something that's been on my mind. Are you saying that if we had the early church setting and all, just lessons, you know, and everybody speak whatever, is it okay for a woman to ask questions in a service? Or where is it in the Bible? I have read that in the Bible somewhere. Women are to be silent, and that keeps coming into my mind.
Mine too, Gloria.
Oh, you're not alone. My wife told me, you know, said, doesn't matter if they ask me a point blank question, I'm not going to speak.
It's, I mean, that's something that grates on me, because right after the 1 Corinthians 14 thing, the next verse says, women are to be quiet. They're not to speak. And I mean, and that's hard. That's hard for me to say, well, is that just that church? Is that just because of this or that or this or that or this or that?
Mm-hmm. If you take all of them into context, it really implies they shall not usurp the authority. Mm-hmm. Now, if I ask you a point blank question, are you usurping the authority which I have as the one everyone has put up there? Yeah. If you take over and won't let go, that's a different thing.
Well, and
because it said there is no more male nor female, Jew or Greek.
So if I stand up,
but it also said, you women, let your husband speak for you.
But in the early church, that women definitely have gifts. You know, there are lots of occasions where, you know, women were given gifts just like men of speaking in tongues and whatever. But the men were given the place within the church to stand up and to be the ones that proclaim those things within the body, within the church as a body.
Which they have sadly been negligent on. Most places, the majority of the workers in a congregation are women. And most congregations try and make it okay by putting a deacon in charge. Who does nothing other than he's just figurehead so that we can do this. Because the guys are really negligent on what God said they should be doing. Why did the women have to do the things? Because their husbands weren't doing it. Aren't doing it. Not just then, still. Probably more so now than then. But also, how many do we read about that were... Lydia was doing what? She was leading a study, but she was teaching the women. Paul told the older women to teach younger women. And so maybe in that setting when we are all together, it's slightly different, but that doesn't mean you don't have a role, a very important one. The younger women have to learn from the older women to know what they're supposed to be, because if they try to learn from the world, where are they going to end up like? The world. So there is a very strong requirement and need. And in the right setting, if I ask you a question, you shouldn't feel embarrassed to answer it. And yet we've been conditioned that way.
Well, I mean, just like to be scared. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, literally, almost like you open your mouth and lightning bolts are coming down. You better not.
Yeah.
You know, in which me, with my stubbornness, take major issue to it.
No.
Because, you know, the way I've done some extensive study, you know, about it all over the Bible. And what I conclude is different than, you know, than what probably all the good little Church of Christ people say. So, anyway.
Or a lot of places.
But the number one
of the first things that we see Paul say is come together, edify one another. Mm-hmm. Right? He says it in Romans that the strong have an obligation to bear the failings of the weak, not to please ourselves. Let each one please his neighbor for his good, to build him up, to edify. That's what edify means, to build them up. One of the reasons we come together, to build each other up, to find out, no, you're not alone in this. The rest of us are going through very similar, if not the exact same thing. At some point, maybe not today, but the older you get, the more of those experiences that you can relate to. At some point in everybody's life, we're going to hit a point that somebody older than you has already been there.
You know, that's something that we found out when we were doing some of the therapy stuff, is that a lot of people isolate themselves because they feel like they're the only one. And that's when they go into some of the deepest, darkest times of their life. Because they don't speak out. And then, you know, they feel like they're the only one, and then they convince themselves of it. And
it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
At that point, you become the only one because you won't let anybody else help.
Right. And really, the thing is if you did ask for help and you did take that encouraging step of saying, look, I know I have a problem, I need help, and you go out, then sometimes that is the greatest thing you can do, because then you're at least knowing that you're not alone.
Yeah.
And that, because, I mean, if you feel that way, then you're wrong, because there's no way that you're the only one.
Right.
In fact, I feel like who was it that was in the level who said, you know, I'm the only Christian left, and he was out in the cave, and God was like, I could, you know, there's tons of...
He didn't say I'm the only Christian left.
Or the,
because that was Elijah after...
Yeah.
He had gone after the prophets of Baal, so it was slightly before the Christian.
Right.
He's the only prophet of God left, and God said, no, there's 700 more.
Yeah.
You know, you're not the only one. But, you know, he needed some edification. We also need training, right? What's Proverbs say? Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he shall not depart from it. Didn't say when he was middle-aged or young, he wouldn't depart from it. But when he's old, it's amazing how much smarter our parents get when we hit 30. They were the dumbest people in the world when I was 16 to 18. Amazing how much of what my dad says now I find myself repeating and thinking, man, he was so smart. And, yeah. It's because his dad did the same thing for him. And I find out that he needed it a whole lot worse than I did. Dad was kind of radical when he was young. He hung out with some pretty rough people on the south side of Chicago. He said he almost caught one of his buddies as he went by him over the seat through the windshield one day, as they ran into a bridge abutment at 80 miles an hour driving down a street in Chicago. How none of us got killed, I have no idea. But he said, you can't do anything I don't already know about, because I've done them all. And don't think you can fool me, because I tried it. Doesn't work. There is nothing new under the sun, right? As Solomon said in Ecclesiastes, nothing new under the sun.
Well, that's why it is so important to use, you know, to use your, you know, and what I see all the time in counseling and talking with families and things, and you've got families, like you were just saying with your family, you know, so much growing up you didn't see, you know, which is a gift. But when you're sitting, of course y'all were homeschooled, but if you were sitting in a classroom with all these other kids and you know, your parents don't know who you're sitting next to or what has happened to that child or they, you know, the people that you're around. And, you know, if you talk and you learn from other parents and you learn from other people that are fellow Christians that totally get where you are, like we are here, you know, you get these red flags that, you know, otherwise you never would get. You know, I hear parents tell me all the time, you know, we've taught them not to do this. I don't see how this happened. I don't see how she got into this situation. I don't see blah, 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 blah. It's because
there wasn't any training. There was isolation,
yes,
but no training.
And there,
Judy says she
ignorance.
Couldn't believe how many friends she had, but when they went away to Abilene, were solid, upstanding Christian young men and women at home, The minute they got away from everything, all of that went away. There's nobody within 12 hours of me to tell me what to do anymore. At a Christian university. She said, I can't tell you. She was an RA a couple years. She cannot tell you how many young ladies she had to help back to find their dorm room because they didn't know where their room was in a Christian university because they weren't trained up. They were isolated from. And the minute the temptation got there, they felt like, ooh, you know, everybody else is doing it. That's one of the biggest myths ever. Everybody else is doing it. No, some small percentage of the people who are quite vocal do it. Not everybody. The vast majority of people don't do it. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Close. No, I'm taking the fingernails.
But it's not training. You know,
no, I mean,
you can keep them separate from, but teach them about.
Yes, you don't have to be, you know, your kids, you know, you always hear the peer pressure thing and all that kind of stuff, yeah. Which is very true. But there are so many people right now, just several, that I've dealt with. The parents are so insanely naive about everything themselves, mm-hmm. which, yay, that's great. But on the other hand, you put your kids in this situation where they go to school 8 hours or more a day,
mm-hmm.
and they're in the pit of something that the parents aren't even aware of.
No.
They don't even know what's going on. And the kids come home, and they're into stuff that the parents don't even know exists, and then all of a sudden, mom and daddy are like, but we didn't teach them that. We don't understand how this came to be.
If you think your kids only know what you teach them,
yeah.
you're very naive.
Absolutely.
Even if you teach them at home.
Absolutely.
Because they will learn from everything and everybody. I think JJ's comment about the parrot was hilarious. And yet sad. The fact that the lady at the pet store said, you better get a very young parrot. Because by the time we have old parents, the only thing they know how to say is curse words. And it's like, man, that's sad. Who goes to a pet store to train a bird? Or even worse, that our culture has got to the point that that is the standard by which everybody speaks enough that that's what the bird learned just by being in the cage.
Yeah.
By all the people that walked by. It says we are to edify one another. We are to train one another. You cannot train unless you know it. We are to teach, right? Teaching and training go hand in hand. They're not the same. Teaching is an intellectual thing. Training is a practical thing. I can teach you how to do something. After that, you have to be trained in how to do it. Matt and I were talking before class. He said he wished at some point he could get an electrical engineering degree. That is teaching. What he does every day when he installs it is training him how it's done. You can have an intellectual knowledge. I had a lot of professors in college who were very good at the intellectual knowledge of what it was. The minute you had said, okay, here is a junction box, here's a conduit, and here's a wire, put it together and make it work, they didn't have a clue because they had no practical training. So teaching and training are two different things. And finally, one of the things that we should always do, no matter what, is preaching. Preaching is that word of God being presented to those who don't know. Can you preach to people who already know?
I suppose you do. Hmm? Everybody does. I mean,
that's because they don't know. They've heard. They don't know.
But wouldn't that be the difference? We can all sit here and retain everything that you just said. We all remember it right now.
Yeah.
We walk out the door, we'll forget it. But that has nothing to do with it. We all need to learn how to apply what we're being taught.
And how can we do what we do differently to facilitate that to work? I think that's what the author's trying to get to in this. He said, yeah, the sermon is something that is a sacred cow. Most places, if you said, we're not going to have a sermon today, half the people will have a heart attack. The other half will stand up and cheer.
Quiet, solid.
Quiet, yeah, but they're not allowed to stand up and cheer, but they would. But really, if it was something beneficial, because the first reason last week I said why, and Matt, you know, bless his heart, actually had the courage to stand up last week and say something in the middle of my sermon, they're not practical. They don't give me anything I could use. So how do we change them so it's beneficial to all of us, that it edifies, train us, teach us, and preach to us when we need to be preached to? 2 weeks ago, I was preaching. No doubt about it. Ezekiel preached a long time. God told him to go lay on your left side in front of the city gate for 390 days. Don't move. Now, flip to your right side for 40 days. Don't move. You say, how is he preaching that way? Because everybody who walked by saw him for 390 days. How many people do you finally think had enough courage to ask him, what are you doing? At which he said, I will be here 390 days. That is the number of years you all will be in captivity because of your sins. Oh, unless you're from Judah, and that's only 40 years. Preaching is not one of those eloquent, flowery sermons that fire and brimstone that they used to come down from the rotating preachers that we used to have that come to the gospel sermons that have 70 people come down and just prick their hearts so badly that they had to respond. And 3 weeks later, we don't see those people anymore. You can prick their heart, but then you have to encourage their soul and train them to be the Christians they need to be, because it's not easy out there. Anybody told you it's easy, lied to you. Well, of course, they didn't read about first century church either. You know, if we think we have it difficult, read some history. I haven't seen a single Christian hung up as a streetlight lately. Haven't seen the emperor use them as wheels for his chariot. Haven't seen anybody down at the stadium fighting lions, other than Detroit.
It's because you live in America.
True.
That does go on in the Middle East.
It does go on in the Middle East. It goes on in Indonesia. It goes on in other places in the world. And yet we think we're oppressed. We're only oppressed because we let it happen. Because if we would stand up and do what was right, we might actually be oppressed, but at least then we would have reason to say we were oppressed. Now we're just whining. Oh, they're taking prayer out of schools. Absolutely, because we allow it. Yeah. They want to take God and God we trust off our money, because we don't anymore. I am out of time, and end of notes. So we shall finish for the week. Thank you for being interactive this week.